It's nice to be with you again. I was trying to remember it, when I was here last. It's been at least 3 years, maybe even four. I can't remember the date that I was here. But you have all been with me on my journey into missions, and you've supported me. Some of you give individually, but thank you for just being a part of this and journeying with me. And so when I left, you know, I hadn't been overseas or not to my mission field yet. And now I've been there 3 years, and I get to tell you the good stuff that God is doing. But when I first moved to Wales, I moved in November of 2010, so 3 years ago. And when I moved, I can honestly tell you I had no idea what to expect or what was going to happen. I grew up in South Africa. Some of you may remember that, but I grew up, my parents are missionaries, and they're in Togo, West Africa, and they're still working in missions. And so I grew up in South Africa, and my missional context was African. And so to move to the United Kingdom and doing missions in the United Kingdom was a completely different ballgame. So God took me out of my comfort zone, even though I'd been in missions pretty much my whole life. He took me completely out of my comfort zone, and I had no idea what to expect. And so I'm also not that great with geography, even though I've had the privilege of traveling. I didn't really know much about Wales. I didn't know where it was, let's be honest. And so a little geography and history lesson on Wales. Oh, I'm the clicker. Sorry. I cannot multitask. So sorry. Okay, so Wales. Wales is this tiny little nation, and if any of you know Hazel, which I'm sure you all do, she has talked to you, I'm sure, about the United Kingdom. So she's my fellow Brit, and she's been like the joy of my morning, getting to talk all things British, and I cannot wait for more Britishness. But Wales is this tiny, you've heard of Scotland, you've heard of England, you've even heard of like Ireland, Northern Ireland, but Wales is just this tiny little, kind of a little forgotten little place. And it's its own nation. It's a principality like Scotland is. But it's only 3 million people. And it's in an area about the size of Massachusetts. And so it's this beautiful, beautiful country. I had not experienced anything as pretty as Wales. It has just stunning rolling hills and beautiful architecture. I could take you from my house, from my flat, my apartment where I lived in the capital city of Cardiff. There were three castles within 10 minutes of my house. So I wasn't struggling for beautiful things to see and do. And so it's this mix of history. So we've got history in Wales that dates back to Roman times. And I can take you down Roman roads and old Roman villages. And Cardiff Castle is the castle that my city that I lived in, Cardiff, it's built around this castle. And part of the wall dates back to 55 A.D. I mean, we're talking Jesus' time, like after, you know, just 55 years after Jesus. So you have this gorgeous, beautiful, beautiful place. And it's very, you've got this old, but then it's first world. So you've got cities, you've got cute Welsh villages, you've got malls, you've got, McDonald's. I mean, we're just a normal first world country that you would look at. And from the outside, you know, if you're just coming in and maybe you're on a vacation or a holiday, you wouldn't think, oh, you know, Wales is a difficult place and this isn't a mission field. You know, you're not suffering for Jesus. You're not in, you know, Indonesia eating snakes. You know, I didn't struggle in those ways. The things that I dealt with, it was beautiful. I mean, my biggest issue was learning how to drive on the left side of the road with a standard with my left hand, and my speed the light car has seen better days, but I'm grateful for it. So when you look at Wales and when you look at just from the outside, you realize, well, this doesn't look like anything. And when I moved, I couldn't comprehend just the severity of what Wales is and the nation that it is. But the fact remains, Wales is actually the darkest place that I've ever done ministry. The United Kingdom is actually more lost than so many places. I've been in Islamic countries. I've been in third world Africa. Nothing was as dark to me as the United Kingdom, as Wales. Because it is a country very much like ours here in America, where they have everything. They're educated. They know what it is to have, so they don't need. And when you go into Wales and when you step into the church
the church in Wales. You don't see a church that's alive and full of life. And I don't sense God's presence there like I do here. It is very, very dark. Wales, just a few little bits about Wales. Wales actually has the highest teen pregnancy rates in Europe. Constantly, I see more girls with babies. It's like an accessory. Girls with babies all the time. It's very low income. Half of the nation is unemployed, so they're raised in low income, low education. So you get money if you have babies, so you start having your babies at 15, 16, and it adds up over time. In 2012, Wales was titled the binge drinking nation, and Cardiff is the capital, was the binge drinking capital of Britain. So, and I'm sure Hazel can attest to this, in the UK, it's, I mean, they drink. That's what they do. They're a drinking nation. We've got drinking and we've got rugby. That's about all Wales has going for it. I took up the rugby. Not the others, but it's about drunkenness. It's crazy to me. This beautiful city that I live in, Cardiff, you walk down the street by day and it's beautiful. It's lovely. It's wonderful. You go out on a Friday evening after 10 p.m. and it's just drunkenness. People laying in their own urine and their own vomit all over the street. People just like you and me. These aren't just college students. These are men and women just like us. And they're doing everything they can to get away from life's problems. The average male in Wales between 30 and 40 years old spends $800 a month on alcohol. So you're unemployed, but you're drinking away everything. And why are they doing this? Because they're searching for something and because they have no hope. Christianity has decreased in Wales. Statistics came out in the 2012 census came out that showed that Christianity is decreasing in Wales while Islam is on the increase. Islam is increasing by sheer population. So you've got Muslims, first and second generation Muslim families coming over, and now they're having babies and more babies and more babies. And so Islam is on the increase, and it's all because of just more and more babies. So not as much conversion by Europeans to Islam, but just population and growth. So the church is a dying entity. Christianity is decreasing, and pubs and clubs are now being, you know, moving into our office space. They're moving into what churches used to be. Meanwhile, mosques are springing up all over. So what we're seeing is the average church size of a Welsh congregation is 19 people, and the average age is over 65. And most of that is because it's tradition, because it's what their parents did and how they were raised. But when you talk about services and congregations that are alive, literally the church is dying. Literally. So this is what we're looking at. So why would anyone, I'm 32, why would anyone my age want to step into, and I love the elderly, take no offense, but why would they want to come into a congregation of 10, 90-year-olds that they don't relate? And so there is a place for the older generations, but the younger generations are asking more questions. Well, we want more. And they're not seeing examples of God's love. They're not seeing an alive church. They haven't tasted what this is. So what you're dealing with is just a very difficult situation. There's a lot of disunity. I could talk to you all day about the disunity among Christians. Wales is very territorial. And so we're dealing with post-shepherdism. So that's where this is my church, my congregation. If you touch my congregation, you're in trouble. You stick to your people, I'll stick to mine. And it's very territorial. So you don't have churches interacting with each other. You don't have unity. You don't have people coming together in a community to reach the community. People are coming together to fill the seats on their pews, and that's it. And so you've got leaders, you've got pastors that aren't working together. So this is the state of the nation that God took me to. So when I moved, here I am. I'm like, hi, let's be friends and let's save the nation of Wales together. And if you know, Hazel is very American now because she's so lovely and like outgoing, but that's not British at all. They're very like, they're much more reserved, and it takes time and it takes relationship. So as an American coming in and one who talks a lot with their hands, it took me a very, very long time. However, just to let you know, God is not done with Wales, and he has not forgotten this tiny little nation. When we came in as missionaries, our fellow Brits, our fellow Christian British friends said, "Why are you moving to Wales? There is no point in being in Wales. It is forgotten. Just give up. There is no point." And these are Christians from England and Wales saying, "Don't even bother." And yet we know that God, I know that God put a mandate on my life and that he wanted to do something in Wales. And so in 3 years, a lot happened. So God is beginning to do things. And here goes the clicker. Are we going to get there? And maybe not. Just kidding. Wrong button. We'll just pretend that there's another slide. I'm sorry. Oh, yay! So this is Capital City Church. Now, what is Capital City Church? Well, when I moved, I was a part of a team. I moved there, and I was a part of a church planting team. And so I was the first one on my team. So it was myself and another family, Brian and Misty Elliott, who some of you may know. And so I got there 6 months before them, and we started Capital City Church. Well, you know, how do you start a church? I was still figuring out how to get to the grocery store without getting lost. And I had this mandate to help be a part of facilitating a church plant. So the first thing that you do is, well, if you're going to have a church, you have to have people. But before you have people, you have to have relationships. So you got to get out there and you got to get to meet people. Well, again, it took me time to get to know this culture. So what I would do is I would get on a train, and I would take the train two stops up from where I lived, and I would get off in this little Welsh village, and I would walk, and I would pray. And I literally knew no one, and I am directionally challenged, so I'd have to be very intentional. And I would walk, and I would pray, and it wasn't like I was banging my tambourine around and, "Come follow me and follow the Lord." It was like just walking and praying and asking God for just divine interventions and saying, "God, who do you want me to talk to, or do you want me to talk, or how can I pray?" And I would pray blessings on the different businesses, and I would just walk, and I would pray. And I began to, through a series of God circumstances, I began to meet other Christians, and I began to meet people who were key in the community, and I began to make pivotal relationships. And so God began to bless just those little ways. And so I began to meet people who would help me have insight on how to build relationships. And so over time, it was 100% my first year. Honestly, it was just building relationships. If you move to Kansas City and you know no one and you are mandated to start a church, and you have nothing, like literally your two suitcases and it's you, what are you going to do? Well, you're going to try to make friends because you have to be sane. And then you invite those friends to church. So I spent 6 months prayer walking and just getting to know. And it was good for me because I was learning the culture and I was learning my way around. And then the Elliott family came from here in Kansas, and they came, and we began to just invite their amazing cooks, Brian and Misty. And so they have four kids, and so we would just invite their friends from school. We would invite our neighbors, and we would have American parties, or we would go to coffee, or we would have American pancakes. And as you probably know, anytime you give away anything free, you've got instant friends. And so this was kind of our way. We kind of bribed them in, like, "Come, let us feed you. And oh, let us tell you about Jesus." And so it was wonderful because it was like, but it was relationship first. And it wasn't like, "Hi, here's coffee, must love God." It wasn't instantaneous. It took time. And so we slowly began to just develop this little church. And so in January of 2012, I'd been there 6 months, we launched Capital City Church. And this is in their living room. And so Brian and Misty have four kids, like I said. So we knew every Sunday that we would have their six and me. So there's seven of us. So we carried on. We knew seven would be there every week. And we started out, you know, with just, you know, Misty would take her four kids and Brian and I would take turns preaching. And sometimes we would only preach to maybe five of us, and we would invite people, and they might come once and be like, "No, thanks. This isn't for me." But we just began to pray. And our prayer the whole time was, "God, send us the people that you want. We want you to build the team. We want your people. We don't want just whoever. We want who you want." And so slowly but surely, you know, we would have 12 on a Sunday, and we would be jumping for joy. And somebody told us once, "Enjoy these moments when you can go to church in your socks." because the day will come when you can't ever do that again, unless you're Hazel. And so, but we would have church in our socks, and we would just come to church, and then after that we would feed everybody and have a meal together, and that's how Capital City Church started. So we carried on like this for months, for several months, started in January. Well, by September, we'd outgrown their little living room, which isn't hard to do, but we had outgrown their living room. And so we began to pray, and finding a building is near on impossible, to have a building and a church building. But once again, God is miraculous and he provided. And so we moved in September. Yeah. Okay. We moved in September to this church called Cates, 1905. This church was built in 1905. It's an old church built during the Welsh Revival. And I could talk to you all day about that too. But it was built during the Welsh Revival. And 100 years later, here we were having our church on Sunday evenings. We shared it with another church in the morning. And God gave us this church. And by September, we had 35 people in our precious little church that was Capital City Church. So God was just blessing us, and it wasn't like massive amounts of people. It wasn't just super, super growth, really fast, really quick. It wasn't like that. It was slow. And there would be times when we would get everything out and we'd be so pumped and we'd be praying and we'd be so ready. And then like seven people would come and every seat but seven is full. And you're just kind of like, Lord, what are you doing? But he reminded us always, if you're faithful, he will be there. He will be the one that does this. And so we would carry on, and God began to bring us the right people. One of those people was a friend. I'm single. I didn't have a family. I had the Elliots, but I needed relationship. I was away from my family. I was away from my friends. And so I prayed and prayed, God, will you give me a friend? I want a best friend. And he did. He provided. It was like a double whammy, because he gave me a best friend who happened to be a phenomenal worship leader. And so Abby Williams is my very best friend in Wales. And she's at the church now, and she's their worship leader. And she became a senior staff member. And God called her from a situation. Church that she was in to us. And so God gave us a phenomenal worship leader who knows the heart of Wales and who knows the heart of God and the heart of worship. And he began to give us staff that are just wonderful. And today, when I left in October of 2013. When I left the church that Sunday, we had 60 people in our church. Yeah. We had 60 people, and my best friend Abby was leading worship, and we have a young couple named Luke and Sophie, who are Welsh. And when Brian and Misty Elliott come back for their furlough later this year, we have a young Welsh couple who are theologically trained who are going to pastor our church. So not only did God plant this church literally from nothing, from prayer walking and from inviting people over for pancakes, to we're meeting in the bottom of a restaurant now because we'd outgrown this building, and we have a staff, and we have pastors, and we have a worship leader. And so it just goes to show that when everyone was saying, it can't be done, why are you bothering? We knew that God had given us a mandate, and it wasn't because we were amazing. It's just that God had a plan, and he was going to make it happen, and we got to be the vessel that he used to make it happen. Well, when we moved into this building that you see is in a student area of Cardiff. Is a massive university city, and so we've just got loads of universities and students and internationals, and so we began to realize, well, we really need to be doing a student ministry. And so I was asked to start a student ministry. I can't imagine why. It's not like I'm young and ridiculous or anything like that. But they ask me, I think probably because they think I'm still 12, but they ask me to start a university ministry for the students there. And so again, like with everything else, we had to start from scratch. And so what's the key to winning people to Jesus? Free things. So we would go and we would set up across campus. You can't you can't go on campuses legally as a Christian, as a church. So what you do is you set up right across the street from the campus, and then you woo them with your free things like iced coffee. And so we would hand out iced coffees, and then we would invite students, passerbyers, we would invite them to like a music night. We would have open mic nights, or we would have games. game nights, and we would just invite people. So we would do it sometimes in the back of the church, or sometimes we would go to like a coffee bar, and we would just have it there. But that's what we would do. So it was all about, how can we take church to them? Because again, these guys are 21. They're questioning everything in life. Why do they want what we have? They don't think that they want what we have. So how can we put it in a way that they're going to grasp it, that they're going to understand it, that they're going to find attractive and desirable? And so we put it on their level, and we would talk to them, and we would develop relationship. And so every week it was constant, coffee meeting, coffee meeting, coffee meeting, falafels, pizza, whatever. But we would meet, and we would talk with students. And we would do this, and we started the Living Room Student Ministry. You know of Chi Alpha here in the States on our state schools. Well, we have the European version is called Students for Christ. And so we launched Students for Christ Wales, otherwise known as the Living Room. So it's not just for our church members. It was for anyone and everyone that we could find. And so we launched the Living Room, and we started this in September of 2012 when we moved into the other building. Well, a year later when I left in November or October, we had 25 students coming. We had 10 nationalities. It's still going. It started with an intern, myself, I was the leader, and Misty Elliott, the other missionary's wife, the three of us, and we were kind of put in charge with making this happen. Well, when I left, we still have a team of 9 who are Welsh and English, who are students, who are young adults, who are young employees, but they're the ones that have taken over. And so this is what's happening, again, in this nation where people are like, why are you bothering? We don't want anything to do with church. I got to talk to Chinese students about Jesus. They never had heard of Jesus. They knew nothing of Jesus. They came to church because they heard it would be a good way to learn English. And to sit and talk with them and to be able to share the most basic ideas with them was the most rewarding thing I've ever done. Do they know Jesus now? They know him. They haven't accepted him, but they're a little bit closer. I got to lead my friend Kylie to Christ. Her parents aren't married and have been together for years. She had only been to church as a baby with her grandma, so she never knew about Christianity. She never knew about Christ, but she came with a friend, and she started coming, and we started hanging out, and we developed a friendship, and I got the joy of leading my friend Kylie to Christ, and then I got the joy of baptizing her. Literally, if my life were to end tomorrow, I could not be more excited about the things that God, not me, but the things that he's allowed me to see and be a part of, because it's his kingdom. This is what God is doing in Wales. This is why you support missions and why you support missionaries. This is why you give, because it makes a difference. This is what he's doing. So I don't know if you can tell, but I'm quite excited and quite passionate about these things. But for me, it's just a joy to be able to share these things with you. And when I left Wales in October, I was asked to kind of share one more time my vision for, you know, just kind of preach and share what my heart is and my vision for Wales and all of that. And the Lord really began to speak to me about Nehemiah. And I just wanted to share just a little bit about that, about Nehemiah and what God is doing and what I shared when I was in Wales. And I believe that it's true for everyone. But if you remember the story of Nehemiah was tasked with, God had given him the vision to rebuild after the Babylonian exile. He was given the task of rebuilding the Jerusalem wall. So rebuilding the city of his forefathers, of his ancestors. And if you remember, the Jerusalem wall was in rubble, and the gates had been burned, and it was a mess. And this was their heritage. This was their holy land. And he wanted to rebuild it so that the Jews could come back to the land that was theirs. And when I've been thinking about Wales, and when I've been thinking about us and how this applies to us, God was sharing this. He was putting it on my heart. And he reminded me that Jerusalem was their wall. Was the wall of the Jews and of the Hebrews. It was the wall of the men that had been exiled, but now it was God saying, this is your wall. I want you to be a part of rebuilding it. And if you read through Nehemiah, it says this family and this family next to this family. But how does that apply to us today? But I want to just read a portion of scripture, if that's okay, out of Nehemiah chapter 4. And I'm just going to read from 4 to 14, so just a few verses. But this is Nehemiah speaking, and it says, "In Judah it was said, 'The strength of those who bear the burdens is falling. There's too much rubble. By ourselves we won't be able to rebuild the wall.' And our enemies said, 'They will not know or see till we come among them and kill them and stop the work.' At the time, the Jews who lived near them came from all directions and said to us 10 times, those building the wall, they said to them, 'You must return to us.' So even the other Jews, even the Jews didn't believe. So in the lowest parts of the space behind the wall, in open places, I stationed people by their clans with their swords and their spears and their bows. And I looked and arose and said to the nobles and to the officials and to the rest of the people, 'Do not be afraid of them. Remember the Lord who is great and awesome, and fight for your brothers, your sons, your daughters, your wives, and your homes.'" This is what Nehemiah is saying to the clans that are the men and the families that are stationed around the wall. This is what he's saying. Don't be afraid. When I went to Wales, in complete honesty, it was the hardest thing I have ever done. Wales, my experience was so, I have wonderful stories and I have a life there. I have a family there that I love. But it was so hard. And I wanted, every day, just about every day, I wanted to quit because it was battle. There were times when I just got tired. I was like, "Lord, when is this going to stop? When is it going to stop being so hard?" And I can come and I can share with you these stories, but what you don't know is all the times that I spent crying and saying, "God, this is a hopeless place." And I began to believe what people were saying about Wales. And I felt like when the Israelites were saying, it's too big, the wall is in too many rubbles, like I can't do anything with it. That's how I felt. My poor little parents in Africa would get Skype phone calls and I would just be pathetic because I was lonely, I was frustrated, I was tired, and I didn't understand what God was doing because at that moment I wasn't seeing the fruit. Now, looking back, I can say that's what God was doing. Oh my goodness, yes, there was fruit, and he allowed me to see that. But when I was in the middle of it, every single day was a challenge for me. Going on your own to this nation that you don't understand. Yes, they speak English, but they're completely different. Going to this place that's so spiritually dark. Going to a place where they don't want what you have and you're there to try to make a difference. How are you going to make a difference? And a lot of times I look at this story, and I shared this with Capital City Church, that when you look at the families, God reminded me that Nehemiah had the vision for the whole wall, but when he put all these families next to each other, they were only responsible for the wall in front of them. They were only responsible for the piece of the wall. It says several times that he placed them, they repaired the wall opposite their own house or next to their house. So they were only responsible for the piece of the wall that was right in front of them. So for me, Christy, I'm not responsible to save the entire nation, as much as I would love to. I am not responsible to save the entire nation of Wales. But I am responsible to my neighbors and to the people that God puts in my life. I live in Kansas City. I moved to Kansas City so I could live with my brother for the year that I'm back in the States. And God showed me from day one when I got to Kansas City, I haven't left the mission field. I still have people that I am responsible for, and they're my neighbors. And so I have coffee with my neighbors, and we go out to dinner. And my heart's desire is that when I leave, they'll be a little bit closer to knowing God. Our responsibility, your responsibility, here in Meriden and Topeka and wherever you are in your school, in your job, in your relationships, in your family, your responsibility is to build the wall, the piece of wall that's right in front of your house and right in front of you. You are not responsible for everyone that you come encounter with, but you are responsible for the people that you have relationships with. I am responsible for the people I have relationships with. And you know what? I mess it up. All the time. There were so many times in Wales where I would walk down the street and I would be bitter because I was frustrated and I wasn't seeing any good happening. And there would be beggars and there would be guys just asking for help, gypsies. And I would just walk by because I had a hard heart half the time because I was frustrated. Because I wasn't getting what I wanted. I wasn't comfortable. I was put out of my way. And do you know that God came down hard on me? And he still has to. because he cares about those people. And if I walk on by, who is going to give them a cup of coffee? Who is going to be their friend? Who is going to love them? If you walk on by, who is going to love the person that you just passed? And God taught me, I don't have any amazing skills. I just talk. But I don't have, but other than that, I'm really not great at a lot of things. But God showed me that's okay. He made me this way. And so he put people in my life that needed relationship. And I can't sit down and I can't quote, like, all the scriptures that you should know. I'm not theologically minded like that. I love Jesus. He loves me. That's about it. But that's enough because he brought people into my life that's what they understood. And so he brought people into my life that just needed some lovin's. They just needed a hug. And I can do that. And now when I leave, they're saying constantly, texting and Facebook and all of this, Christy, when are you coming back? I miss you. I miss your hugs. We just miss you. And it's not because I'm amazing, but it's because God is willing to use even somebody who deals with bitterness and anger and frustrations and gets mad at God. He's willing to use that. And because I was willing to just go and say yes to what was in front of me. And so I want to encourage you. And I think based on what the Lord is speaking to you already, and based on just what he was showing me for you, that God has you where you are in this place for a reason. And your wall is what's right in front of you. This is my wall. It's coming. This is my wall. This is Wales, and this was my portion of the wall. This was at my farewell party. When I went to Wales, I knew 4 people. When I left, 75 people came to give me lovin's and send me off. Now, I'm not saying that's because I'm amazing. I'm saying that's the redemption of the Lord. That's God's hand. That's him loving me and allowing me to love them. But you have a responsibility. And if you will say yes, think of the wall that you could build right in front of you. In Nehemiah, they rebuilt the whole city in 52 days. Now, they had to build with one sword in their hand while they laid bricks in the other, and half of them, they didn't sleep, and it was exhausting. But this is a church that does battle, and your responsibility is to battle for yourself and for your neighbors, and that comes through building a wall. That comes through just showing love. If you're a school teacher, love on your kids. If you're an engineer, love on your neighbors. Love on the men that you design things with. But if whatever you are, let God use you as you are to build the wall like Nehemiah. And even though it feels, you might feel small, and sometimes you just think, God, what are you going to do with me? I'm 93 years old. I can't get out. I struggle, in bad weather, but you can pray. The best prayer warrior I know is my 87-year-old grandma. If I want to hear from God, I go to my grandma. I say, Grandma, can you talk to Jesus? Because she knows. That woman, she prays like none other. And God uses her, and she is a warrior. And so if all you can do physically is pray, that's the most important thing. And so let that be an encouragement that God is here. He's using you. He wants to bring restoration and redemption. He wants to work on those dark places of your heart that you don't want to give him access to. I like to layer my issues and shove them down. But the reality is they're there. But God wants to use, he doesn't just call missionaries to bless nations. He calls missionaries because he wants to work in us. And if any missionary tells you otherwise, they're lying. Because we are there for God to work in our own hearts. And so be encouraged. God will bless you. Build your wall. And I just want to say thank you for sending me. Thank you for just being a part of my journey, for supporting me. I'm hoping to get back to Wales within a year. I've really only just gotten started on my itineration. But I'm planning on going back to Wales, working with the Elliott family, doing church planting, and we want to see more capital city churches. We want to see more churches in southern Wales. It worked once. We believe it's going to work 10, 20 more times. And so that's my goal, is to get back to my friends and family there and just get back and do the same thing again. We're going to move into a different area. So same thing, coffee meetings, prayer walks, getting to know people, loving on them, strategizing, whatever we can do. But I covet your prayers. I covet them. And I know some of you list the missionaries that you support and you pray for them every single day. Thank you for that. If I pop in your head and that crazy girl who just talked a lot, if I pop in your head at some point, will you pray? Because I need that, because it is hard. But God is faithful, and I appreciate those prayers. And thank you for sending me and just being a part. And as I finish, I would just like to pray a prayer of blessing over you and over this congregation, and just from my heart and from my Welsh friends and family. So many of them said, send our love to Americans, you know, and they want you to know that they're grateful, because they recognize that they couldn't have a church if it wasn't for what you had prayed for. And so let me just pray a prayer of blessing over you. Father God, I thank you for who you are. And God, that you are the God who is so big and so mighty and so strong, but you allow yourself to be so small that you fit in my heart. God, I pray that you would make yourself known in real and deep ways in the people, in the lives of the people here in this room. God, I pray for those that are dealing with financial issues, that are dealing with cancer, that are dealing with marital issues, that are dealing with wayward children. God, when they feel like it can't be done, Lord, I pray that they would remember that you are a warrior God, that you fight for your children. You fight. And Lord, I pray your blessing. God, I ask your blessing in this place, that Jefferson Assembly of God would be a sending point, that they would send out your love, that they would send out your grace and your unconditional favor on their neighbors and on their friends. And Lord, I just pray that you would come and that you would strengthen and empower this church. God, I pray that this room would be bursting at the seams, and that miracles would be an everyday experience, and that revelations would be an everyday experience here, that people would come even more so with the expectancy that the miraculous is going to happen, that healings happen, and that word spreads throughout the community that there's something going on in this church. God, I pray for every individual. Some here are struggling today. And Lord, I just pray for your courage, for your encouragement, and for your strength. And God, for those that are out there and they're doing their part, Lord, would you just continue to bless them? God, would this be the house where you dwell and where you rest? But may we take your spirit and your soul out to our neighbors. God, teach us how to build the wall in Meriden, Kansas, and in our hearts and in our neighbors' hearts. Teach us how to build your wall. God, I ask for your favor and your blessing in this place. Bless this church, God, and thank you for obedient children who love you. God, we give you praise. Amen.